emotional. Thanks, Nick. Appreciate that, buddy. Okay, so I am here because Mason isn't. He had his baby last night. Actually, Dara did, I guess, Nick did all the work. But they had their baby last night, little Molly. So I am here to fill in his shoes, which I will do my best. But so Mason came to us, this is about 3 weeks ago, during an elders meeting. And he said, you know, what happens if the baby comes early? We should probably have a plan in action to where somebody will be there to cover and actually have a sermon ready. So Adam and I volunteered to do that. I had just read this amazing, it was just one verse that really stirred me, and I was like, it was in Naaman, it was in 2 Kings, but it was the story of Naaman. And I read that verse, and I was like, man, it wrecked me. And I was like, that is a great verse. So as soon as he asked it, this was like the next day, I was like, I got this. I know exactly what, I got this. And he's like, okay. And I felt good about it because I was like, I got plenty of time. I mean, the baby's not going to be here until the earliest on the 18th, right? So I got plenty of time. So yesterday, I got the text from Mason, and it was, hey, ... So Dara's water broke. And so, of course, my reply text was, no! And then off we went. So last night, I had a wedding last night. I don't know if y'all know this, but Mr. and Mrs. Jabari Tynes, I don't know if they're not here, but that was incredible. So I definitely wasn't going to miss that. It was amazing, and I'm glad I did go. But so I get home at like 9:30, and I start cramming for a sermon that I had not yet prepared for, again, because I had 7 days. So in my panic, and I'm sitting, I'm thinking, you know what? It just came to me. I don't think that Dara Miller considered me at all. She didn't consider how hard this was going to be on me one time, and it's evident. I didn't get an apology text, anything, nothing. So here we are. And I did. So I chose the story of Naaman because it did. It sparked something in me a week or so ago when I read it, or 2 weeks ago when I read it, whenever it was. But it grabbed a hold of me. I was like, I got it. This is something. So I chose this story. And then as I was thinking about the story, I like to have a kid's, as I was preparing for this, I thought, maybe I should have the kids go back before I get into this too deep. So let's go ahead and get the kids out of here. Sorry, guys. You can go to the back there. Mr. Danny's back there. Mr. Bobby is not, so just he'll wave you the right direction. Sorry, guys. Thank you, Miss Mindy, for reminding me. She's waving her arms crazily, and I just thought, oh, she's really feeling it tonight. Okay, so I like to start off with a story. Usually these stories are something really dumb that I've done or a really poor decision I've made that ended horribly. Thankfully, I have plenty of those stories. And so I chose this one that ties into today's lesson. This was about 14 years ago, 12 to 14 years ago. I'm not real good with math. Okay, so it was about 12 to 14 years ago. And at the time, Dominic and I and the kids were living in Weatherford. And in Weatherford, there's not a whole lot to do, at least the part we were in. And so this one weekend, one of Dominic's uncles had brought over a giant three-wheeled bicycle. I mean, this thing looks like it was made by giants. I mean, it was big. It was massive. So I am riding this bicycle up and down the driveway. And it's one of those, it's the country. So it's not like paved. It's like caliche. It's like dirt, rock, gravel. Anyway, so I'm going up and down this driveway and I'm just having a great time. And the kids are there watching me. And of course, 5 minutes go by and you have to trick this up, right? It's time to do some stunts. As I said, I'm gonna do a stunt here. I'm really gonna do something fun. So I decide I'm gonna ride a wheelie on this giant bicycle. So I get on it and I'm trying. It's so big and so massive. It's not easy, but I'm not gonna give up because I know it's gonna be awesome. So I'm trying to do this, and little Casey and Kyle are over there watching, and Casey looks at me and she says, "Dad, I don't think this is a good idea." And Kyle says, Dad, you're gonna die. You're gonna, don't do this. But in my head, what I heard was, Dad, if you can pull this off, this is gonna be something we talk about at every family get together. Every family, this is gonna be the story we tell about how awesome the Willie was that Dad rode when we were 8 and 10 years old. It's gonna be incredible and it will live on forever. Generations will talk about the Willie. So in my head, this is what I'm hearing. So I'm like, okay, I've got this. I'm going to do this. So I'm like, okay, I'm thinking it out. I'm like, okay, well, momentum, you gotta be stopped so that you can get the momentum going really fast, and that'll pull the bike. If you pull the bike at the right time, then you can ride the wheelie and just keep going. And it's gonna be awesome. I had it perfectly planned out in my head. So I get on the bike and I start pedaling as fast as I can. And I grab the handlebars and I pull back on the handlebars and the bike goes up and it is working. It is beautiful, awesome, for about 2 feet. And the bike just doesn't stop. There's so much weight to this bike that once it gets up, it just keeps going, and it slams my head into this driveway. So I don't know if you've had a concussion, but this was one of my best. I've had several, which explains a lot. But now I've had several concussions. This one was probably the worst. Probably, I don't remember the other ones. That's how they work. But this was probably the worst one. So I am, of course, Dominique, she's used to this. I mean, God bless her. She's given me honey, are you okay? And not like sincere. It's like, are you okay? Like, she knows, again, it's that thing. And so I have walked over to the back of my truck, and I'm leaning on the truck because I'm so okay. Yeah, I'm fine. I'm fine. It's okay. I'm not okay. And I'm standing there, and I don't remember this. But little Kyle is over there talking to me, Dad, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine. And he says, he remembers vividly, and I don't, but he remembers vividly me like digging rocks out of my bloody back of my head. It wasn't a pretty sight. It was a mess. And then, I mean, it's a gift that keeps on giving. Like, I just, what, 2 years ago had to get some more of the rocks removed from my head. It's, yeah. So not a great thing. I did not listen to the advice that I was given by my children. I thought, I got this. It's going to be awesome. And so that's kind of where we pick up in Naaman here. We're going to talk about someone who fortunately had a different outcome when they listened to their advice. So open your Bibles up to 2 Kings 5. That's where we're going to be in the story of Naaman. 2 Kings 5. So verse 1, hopefully you're there. I'll stall for a second. If you get it. Okay. All right, so verse 1. Is it going to be on the screen there, Danny? There we go. Okay, so if you haven't found it in your Bible, it's also on the wall. Now, Naaman was commander of the army of the king of Aram. He was a great man in the sight of his master and highly regarded, because through him, the Lord had given victory to Aram. He was a valiant soldier, but he had leprosy. So the Bible's telling us who Naaman is. He's a commander of the Syrian or Aram, the army of Aram, that's Syria. But he's a commander of the Syrian army. He is a great man in the sight of his master, the king. He's wealthy. He's powerful. He's influential. He's highly regarded by the soldiers and the people. He's a dude. Also, he was highly regarded by God. Now, this verse says that through Naaman, God granted Aram victories. But Aram, or Syria, was an enemy of God's people. And this is kind of common throughout the Bible. Anytime that God punishes or reprimands or chastises his people with a defeat, that means he's giving an enemy a victory. So this is one of those situations where God is giving the enemy a victory. His people were sinning, they needed to be corrected, and he used an enemy. God does this kind of all throughout the Bible. Like I said, this does not mean, though, that he endorses the enemy. It just means that he uses them. And in this case, that's what's happening here with Syria punishing Israel, enemy of God, getting this victory, except for Naaman. Naaman was part of the Syrian army, But God saw something in him. God saw a difference. He saw something that no one else could see. God could see his heart. He could see that there was some good in there. It's kind of like a spiritual MRI. Like God saw something in there that he couldn't see, that no one else could see. So God goes to work. Now, the Bible doesn't tell us if God struck Naaman with leprosy. He says he has it, but it didn't say how he got it. We don't know if God struck him with that or if he just happened to catch it. But, I mean, for me, I love the idea that God did. I mean, again, it doesn't say, but I love the idea that God did, and like this was the start of God's hand on Naaman. This was the beginning of this process of sanctification or getting Naaman to the right spot where he could be changed by God, this restored by God. Either way, God uses it for his good. Okay, so verse 2, actually you're going to do 2 and 3 here, Danny. Now bands of raiders from Aram had gone out and taken captive a young girl from Israel. She served Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, "If only my master would see the prophet who is in Samaria, he would cure him of leprosy." So, in one of these God-granted victories that were given to Aram through Naaman, they got a young girl, brought her back as a servant in the house of Naaman. And this girl, you can see the boldness and the courage that it would have taken for this young girl to even mention God in this house. But she goes in and she says, "I know that there is a man in Israel that can cure my master of his illness." And if you can do this later, but Luke 4:27, it says in Luke 4:27 that there are a lot of lepers in the land of Israel in the time of Elisha, and none of them were healed except for Naaman the Syrian. So this was not something that had happened before. This girl did not witness this, you know, this healing of a leper before. This was something that hadn't been done, but she had such faith in God and in Elisha being God's man that she recommended her master to travel the distance to go into enemy land to be healed. So verse 4 through 6 picks up and it says, "Naaman went to his master and told him what the girl from Israel had said. 'By all means go,' the king of Aram replied. 'I will send a letter to the king of Israel.' So Naaman left, taking with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 sets of clothing. The letter he took with him read this: 'With this letter I'm sending my servant Naaman to you so that you may cure him of his leprosy.'" Okay, so Naaman gets the good news, and he goes to the king of Syria. He shares the good news, and the king is like, "Yeah, man, go, get it done. Also, I'm going to give you a note." This is like a get-out-of-jail-free card kind of thing. He's sending a letter to the king. It is a very simple letter. It was just, this is my servant Naaman, heal him of his leprosy. Okay, pretty simple letter, no big deal. So the king, King Jehoram, the king of Israel, gets this letter, and it doesn't go well. He does not handle this letter very well. So in verse 7, it says, "As soon as the king of Israel read the letter, he tore his robes and said, 'Am I God? Can I kill and bring back to life? Why does this fellow send someone to me to be cured of this leprosy? See how he is trying to pick a quarrel with me.' So immediately, the king freaks out. He's like, 'What? Why is he trying to pick a fight with me? Why is he so mean?'" This was a very public mental breakdown by the king of Israel, very public, to the point where word gets back to Elisha about this episode. And I just want to say here, the king has obviously got a general knowledge of who God is. He makes the statement, "Who am I, God, that I can kill and give life?" So he knows who God is, but there's no relationship. And that's kind of proven here in the fact that the first thing he should have thought of was Elisha. Like he said, "Yeah, go see Elisha. He'll take care of you." The king freaks out, tears his robes. So like I said, Elisha gets word about this. And in verse 8, it says, "When Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his clothes, he sent him this message: 'Why have you torn your robes? Have the man come to me so that he will know there is a prophet in Israel.'" So Elisha sends his own letter to King Jehoram, to King Jehoram, and he says, "Why have you torn your robes?" This is a clear rebuke of the king. He says, what are you freaking out about? Send Naaman to me so that I can remind you and all the people that God is still in control and that he still has a man here in Israel. So verse 9 picks up with Naaman going to Elisha's house. It says, so Naaman went with his horses and chariots, stopped at the door of Elisha's house, all the way to his door. He's loaded down. But before I go any further, I just want to say, okay, so like my dad, and I'm sure a lot of your dads have sayings. My dad has a saying, and he used it a lot actually, but it was hat in hand. You got to go hat in hand, son. And it was usually when you're asking for a raise, asking for forgiveness, asking for a favor. You just go hat in hand. It's a metaphor for humility. Verse 9 is the opposite of that. Naaman is all about the show. He has his golden armor, his fancy uniform, soldiers, horses, his decked out chariots, and of course his attendants. He's loaded down with a small fortune in clothing and gold and silver. This is not a hat in hand moment for Naaman. He rides up in all of his grandeur right to Elisha's front door. And if you think about it, like when I read this, I always imagine like he's up at the door. I mean, because it doesn't say he just stopped. He walked, rode up to the door. Like he's expecting, he's got all of his guys with him, all this. And I picture Naaman like standing there and like, His servants are at the door, and he's like, hold on, don't knock yet, don't knock. No, wait, hold on. Okay, knock. And he's like, because he's the guy, right? And he's got all of his stuff with him. He's making this big show, and he goes to Elisha's door, and he's expecting a hero's welcome. Like, it's Naaman, look how great he is. Verse 10 says, Elisha sent a messenger to him, go wash yourself 7 times in the Jordan, and your flesh will be restored, and you will be cleansed. That's it. Elisha doesn't even greet him at the door. He sends a servant. And you ask yourself, maybe Elisha, no, Elisha knew he was coming. Elisha knew he was at the door, and he gave him the proper welcome that he needed, which was he sent a servant. Well, this is too much. This is too much for Naaman. Where's the hero's welcome that he wanted? I mean, if the leprosy was like the first part of the humbling of Naaman, this has got to be part 2. And also, the Jordan River. The Jordan River is a disgusting, muddy river that the commoners use, right? This is not something that somebody of this stature would ever get in or be seen bathing in, for sure. And I can tell you, I was raised, Dominic and I guess we were kind of raised together since we got married as children, but we have always loved going to Galveston. We go to Galveston, like, we swim in the ocean, and that's ocean to us. Like, it's beautiful. We go down to Galveston, and we love it. Our kids love it. We raised our kids going to Galveston. We swam. We had fun. We spent weekends there. We've gone on vacations there. It's the best. Like, that is it's our happy place. But I can imagine somebody that was, like, born in Cozumel and raised in like the crystal clear waters, and it's all beautiful and you can see fish. I mean, that would be awesome to be able to see fish in the water, but they can see fish and stuff. I can see them coming to Galveston and being like, no, I'm not doing that. And I get it. I mean, I understand, but let me say that once you learn to dodge the jellyfish and the hypodermic needles, there is nothing wrong with that water. It's awesome. But for Naaman, this was too much. He just could not handle it. So we pick up in verse 11 and 12. But Naaman went away angry and said, I thought that he would have surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and wave his hand over the spot and cure me of my leprosy. Are not Abana and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Couldn't I wash in them and be cleansed? So he turned and he went off in a rage. He wanted a show. He wanted Elisha to call on the name of the Lord and do the, waving his hands around and make some cool stuff happen and sacrifice some animals and a confetti cannon or a t-shirt gun. Like he wanted a spectacle. He wanted to be healed big, right? And why the rivers of Damascus? Why can't he use those? They're perfectly clean. What's wrong with that? They're so much cleaner. But personally, this is just personal. I'm just sharing out loud here. I think God used that disgusting water because I think he wanted to be clear that the healing did not come from these beautiful, pristine waters that healed him. I think he wanted everybody to know that that disgusting, almost stagnant, gross water is not what healed him. It's going to be the power of God, right? I think that is why he chose that, is because he wanted to make it abundantly clear that this was God doing this work, not some magic in the waters, okay? So Naaman's pride was going to cost him a miracle. It says he was going to leave in a rage. But then Naaman got some advice from some lowly people. Verses 13 and 14. Naaman's servants went to him and said, "My father, if the prophet had told you to do something great or some great thing, would you not have done it? How much more then when he tells you, wash and be cleansed?" So he went down and dipped himself in the Jordan 7 times as the man of God had told him. And his flesh was restored, and his skin became like that of a young boy. This was his dad, I don't think that's a good idea moment. But he listened. His servant said, "What do you have to lose?" It was his pride. That's what he had to lose here. That's what he needed to lose here. Something changes with Naaman here. You can see it. He goes from the rage is gone. The rage is gone. He's listening to his servants, and he's like, "I've got to do this." So he does. He gets in the water. He dunks himself 7 times. And not only is he healed, but God goes a step further. He's given the skin like that of a young boy. Now, there are some amazing things happening here. Of course, you have the healing of the leprosy. But this young skin thing. So as a 47-year-old man, which is 3 years younger than Brent Lightsey, I really appreciate God going the extra mile here, because I've had dry spots. Like, what is that? You know, and you wake up and you're like, there's a new wrinkle. I didn't have that yesterday. Or just like cuts that show up, unknown origins. You're just like, I'm bleeding on my arm. I've obviously been stabbed somehow. I don't know where this came from. Like, my skin has changed. So I know it seems like a small thing, but this was really big to me. It's just God going just a step further. Like, yeah, I'm going to cleanse you and I'm going to heal you of your leprosy, but I'm also going to give you skin like a young boy. Well, I just thought that was really cool. I really appreciated that. So God restores Naaman, and Naaman's response it's awesome. Okay, so 15 and 16. Then Naaman and all his attendants went back to the man of God. He stood before him and said, "Now I know there is no God in all the world except in Israel. So please accept a gift from your servant." The prophet answered, "As surely as the Lord lives whom I serve, I will not accept a thing." Even though Naaman urged him, he refused. He publicly confesses. This is the same Naaman that was all about him just a few verses ago. Now he's publicly professing that there is only one true God, and it is the God of Israel. He's so thankful that he tries to offer Elisha this fortune, you know, the clothes, the gold, the silver. Of course, Elisha rejects the offer. Elisha wants Naaman to know that the gift that he's been given was from God, and it was a gift. It's not something that could be bought, purchased, or earned. This was something that God gave him. It was a healing that only God could give. And then Naaman has a really weird request. Verse 17 says, "If you will not," he's talking about take the money, "if you will not," says Naaman, "please let me, your servant, be given as much earth as a pair of mules can carry. For your servant will never again make burnt offerings and sacrifices to any other god but the Lord." So he's asking for this dirt because he wants to worship God in his land, okay? And it was a belief back then that if you wanted to worship a god, you could only do that on the soil that was in the native land of that god. Like, if that god was only in Egypt, then you had to go to Egypt to worship that god. That was the thought process that he had here. It's a little off base, but the intent that he had was to honor and worship God where he was at.
there had been a restoration of not only his body, but of his heart. You can see it happening. He's that new Christian that's on fire for God. You know, the one that's, yeah, I want to go to, can I go to Syria with the winds? Sure, I'll go. I'll preach next Sunday. I'm going to start a D group. Hey, I know I'm going to start a bus ministry. You cool with me starting a bus ministry? I'd like to be the church janitor. Can we start a bell choir? I'd like to be in the bell choir. Like, just he's that guy or girl that's just really on fire for God, and he's wanting to do all these amazing things right off the bat. And that is where Naaman's at. He's fired up, and it's awesome, right? And now we get to my favorite verse, and not because it's the last one we're going to do today. This is the one that caught me and just wrecked me. So I'm going to share this with you, but I'm not getting wrecked when I do this. I'm going to be tough here. But may the Lord forgive your servant for this one thing. When my master enters the temple of Ramon to bow down, and he is leaning on my arm, and I have to bow down there also. When I bow down in the temple of Ramon, may the Lord forgive me for this. I knew that was going to get me. This is so just the most beautiful picture of who God is and what he does for people. He's taken this man that was so prideful and all about himself, and he just changes him. He turns him into a whole new person, to the point where his concern isn't, you know, like, what about me? It's all about, God, I've got this thing that I have to do, that I'm forced to do, and it's going to bring dishonor to you. And he's so broken that he's asking for this. And I just think that is the most amazing thing. Like, that the beginning, I mean, this is just a complete 180 from who he was to who he is now. And it's all God. And Elisha has the perfect response for him. After he asked for this one favor, please don't hold this thing against me. His response, Elisha's response to him is, go in peace. And I can tell you, like, for the first time in Naaman's life, he is going to be going in peace. As the band comes up, I just want to say that we are not different than Naaman. Our pride keeps us from doing what we should do. It keeps us from amazing things, sharing the gospel, asking for forgiveness, giving forgiveness, or just making God a priority over ourselves. God has a plan for you. Do not let pride keep you from your miracle, especially if that miracle is your salvation. Sin is leprosy. It gets a hold of you, it devours you, and it leads to death. But God has the cure, and it's through him. It's through the restoration that we can only get through the blood of Jesus. He wants to restore you. If you have not done that, he wants to restore you. There is restoration through salvation. And if you want to do that, or you want to talk about that, as soon as I'm done praying, you can just meet me. I'll be in the back corner back here. And if you want to talk about it, I will tell you how easy God makes it for you to be restored and made new through him.